that from the moment of conception, that you and I are living, distinct, and whole human beings.
Thanks for joining us today for Straight Talk on Life Issues. I'm your host, Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves.
It's an often debated question amongst families, Victor. When should we talk to the kids about the reality of abortion? We hope to answer some of those questions today.
And we live in a world that seems obsessed with solving problems by killing life rather than nurturing it.
And yet there's a distinction between things that are alive and things that are not. We need to teach our children about the sanctity of life and marvel at things that are alive.
And we need to intentionally pass on a legacy that is consistent with our beliefs to our children, and that's talking to them about what it means to be pro-life. Today we're joined by Megan and Tripp Allman. Megan worked as an award-winning journalist until 2008 when she decided to pursue a career in speaking and teaching about Christian apologetics. She began working with the Life Training Institute back in 2009, and in 2023, she joined the speaking team at Apologetics Incorporated. Tripp has a passion for educating students in Christian theology, the Christian worldview, and apologetics. This grew in large part from growing up in a Christian home, but then struggling profoundly with a tidal wave of cultural ideas that engulfed him as he entered a secular university.
First of all, Tripp and Megan, I want to welcome you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're excited to be here with you guys.
Well, guys, I'd like you both to respond to this. What's the first step to approaching this topic of abortion with kids?
The first step, I think, is a firm foundation, Brad. You know, abortion has a lot of ins and outs. The conversation around it in the culture involves many things because there are many difficult things that bump into the issue of abortion. But with young children, if we can start by bottom up, right, by teaching them that they are made in the image of God, it's almost a catechism of sorts where we talk about this with our kids when they were very young. We would ask our daughter, who was born first, Neely, why are you valuable? And she would say, because I'm a human being made in the image of God. And we would just do that every so often and reiterate that. And what that gave us was a foundation to always come back to, even when she was struggling with little things at school or with friends, as she was coming up through the years. This began as early as 2 or 3 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, what age do you think is the right age to bring up the topic of abortion with your kids?
That is a good question. The way we try to approach controversial topics is, and this is the way we even coach parents, so we work with students quite a bit. Our job as parents is to stay, hopefully, one step ahead of the culture, of what they're hearing, of their own development. We want to be right in step with that. So on the one hand, we don't want to expose our children to topics and things that they're not quite ready for. You know, we don't start talking about sex to our two-year-old, but at some point, you know, if they're in public school, if they are watching Netflix, like they are going to be exposed to the topic probably before we're ready to introduce them to the topic. So our goal has been to make sure we know what our kids are being exposed to so that we can, right along with their exposure to it, can be there to give answers or to give preparation. In general, then, that's our approach. So when it comes to the topic of abortion, it depends. If our kids are listening to the news, the word is going to come up. Right. In the line of work that Megan does, well, the topic did come up when our kids were 3 years old. What does that mean? And we have to put it in the simplest terms possible that they can understand. You probably remember some of the ways that we talked about what mommy does for work when she goes to talk about pro-life issues or goes to talk about abortion, because those they certainly would hear those words.
Yeah. And so then we build on that foundation that we've created. When they come to us with direct questions, we want to be able to answer as directly as possible. But that age factor, there's something to that. I always think about Corrie Ten Boom, you know, the wonderful, heroic woman who saved Jews during World War II by hiding them in her home. And she remembered an account with her father about a difficult question she had that she'd been exposed to at school. And it dealt with things that were a little more mature than where she was. She asked her father about it in the alone time they had on the train going to the naval yard so that he could set his clock to go back and set all of the clocks in the shop that he kept. And that special time was the time that Corrie chose to bring that question up. Her father did not answer right away. And so for a moment, she had fear. She thought, oh no, I've done something wrong. And then when they arrived at the train yard or the naval yard, her dad said, Corey, I want you to carry my pack. And when she tried to lift it, she could not. She said, Papa, I can't. It's too heavy. And he responded, I know. That's why I will carry it for you until you are ready. All of these matters are things like that. And depending on where your child is, what they've been exposed to, what kinds of questions they're asking, I think we can proceed, probably imperfectly, but with wisdom to provide answers that are helpful. I don't think it's wrong to give a middle school student a direct answer. They're at an age where they are asking all of the questions. They're trying to put together all the facts that they've been learning and memorizing up to this point. In fact, my work with middle schoolers on the pro-life issue is sometimes easier than my work with adults when I present them with a clear case for the pro-life view. They are so ready to make the connections from A to B to C. And so in talking with them about it, I can give them very direct answers. Mm-hmm. Abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. That's the definition. It doesn't really beg questions across the board unless some want to use the scientific terms. But for those students, I can give that answer. For younger ones, it depends on what they have been exposed to. So you begin, I think, leading with questions. Why do you ask? Mm-hmm. You want to know what abortion means? Yeah. Where did you hear the term? What do you think it means? And then you go kind of with what you understand they have already and proceed from there.
So I know when our own kids asked about your work or this topic, the first kinds of things I remember saying are something like, well, mommy helps people understand how valuable a baby is in the womb. If that was there, then in the middle school sort of stage where we go that step further mm-hmm. to say, mommy's not just helping people understand how valuable the baby's life is in the womb, but some people really don't understand that, even so much as they are willing to kill a baby's life when it is still in the womb. In large part, it's because they don't understand what's actually going on.
Or many other reasons.
So Megan, once that foundation that you've spoken about, once that's laid, how might you, for example, explain an abortion procedure to a child that's ready?
Well, I might not start with an abortion procedure. I would probably start with making a positive pro-life case. And because that again, is the next big step in that foundation, then we can describe the ins and outs of procedures. First, though, I would go to the case for why the pro-life view is true. And I would start with science in language that's understandable. And the science is very clear that from the moment of conception, that you and I are living, distinct, and whole human beings. And I can even spend some time in each of those areas. We know we're alive. Remember when we talked about things that are alive in science class, or when you learn, as if I'm talking to that child, it's like just like every other organism. It grows, it turns food into energy, it responds when you mess with it. It can even repair wounds, just like if you scrape your arm or something like that, you can repair that, your body can repair that. An embryo, a baby in the womb, even when it's only a single cell, it can begin doing those types of things. We know that it's distinct because it's not part of its mom's body. It has its own unique genetic code from the moment it comes into existence, making it uniquely that child, just like you had yours at that point in time. And it is a whole human being. It's not like your Legos that you put together piece by piece. That's not how babies come to be. Rather, from the moment you were just a tiny little cell, son or daughter or student or whomever I'm speaking with, you drove your own development from within, just like you're still doing right now. So these are things, and you can, of course, elaborate on those examples with a child. That's all biology, but you can do it in language that's more like storytelling, or you can be very straight and specific with it. Then I would move to make a philosophical case, but one that they could understand. And by the way, young children, kindergarten, pre-K, they grasp this so readily and so easily. If you walk into a classroom of young children and you say, look around, what is it that we all have in common? And they'll start looking and noting things. Well, it's not our hair color. It's not even our outward appearance, our skin color. Our eyes are different. We like different clothes. Some of us are girls and some of us are boys. Or you might think in terms of some have cooties and some don't. I don't know where they are with that. But this is where they are. And at the end of the day, they will grasp more readily than other audiences. We're all human beings. That's the one thing that we have in common. That right there is a summation of the philosophical case that would say there is no morally relevant difference between the embryos that all of us once were and the adults that we are now that would have made it okay to have killed us back then when we were in the womb, but not now. And at that point, they can start asking questions, and I would let them ask before I start giving more. If they're asking questions, well, what about the fact that they don't look like the rest of us? They're just little cells. My return question would be, well, is it what we look like that makes us valuable? And then we're back to that foundation. If their question is, but they're not awake, they can't talk to me. Oh, is it your ability to speak that makes you valuable? No, back to that foundation. And you can even draw examples out to demonstrate that it's not just unborn children who can't speak. It's those who might be mute or deaf, those who can't speak for other reasons. So the conversation, and that's really what it is ongoing. And there's a lot of patience, a lot of asking to see what they already are working with, giving what you think is appropriate, and then allowing them to ask in return.
Yeah, well, I think you're giving some parents some really good ideas on how they can approach their own children. Your children are growing up in a household where they are not susceptible to the pressures and falsehoods of the abortion industry. Is there a point where, as they get older, you will change gears of how you're interacting with them on this issue?
We've already done that with both of our children. Our son is much younger. He's 12. Our daughter is 18 at this point. So we've had many years of interaction on the issue, not only through the work that I'm doing, but because Tripp's work is directly with college students. So we have college students in and out of our house all the time who are struggling with these very issues in real time. So the conversations are very ready at our house. I think, though, that in any household, what you want to do is begin to change the nature of the conversation. And I think middle school is right around a good age to do it. It might be sooner for kids who are demonstrating more maturity or asking different questions or who are exposed to more.
That's when they're moving into that logic stage of development, right? Where they're beginning to make those connections, beginning to ask the questions.
Right about when they're starting to push back. Why? Why? Why then?
Which they will do. Absolutely.
The transition is happening, and that's very natural. With our kids, I think we've begun flipping the tables on them a little bit in the environment of our home so we can hear what their responses would be. So we ask them, if one of your friends came to you and said, I think that abortion is something that should be allowed. This recent election cycle was a wonderful opportunity to bring these conversations up. You heard this on the news. Well, how would you respond to someone if they were standing in front of you? And let them struggle through the response in a place where we can then coach as needed. We also, at this point, are all right with our kids being exposed to more because they're still with us. We do a lot of narrating about what we see on movies, what we read in the books, what we see on television, and what we see happening right in our own community. And that's not just limited to the issue of abortion. It's unlimited in terms of a whole host of moral issues that they're seeing unfold in front of them. What do you think about this? I want to hear their response. I want them to articulate and put the words into place after they've had this foundation, after we've read to them story after story. There are other children's stories that are fabulous. Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches is a wonderful story that's about human value, those who have stars on thars and those who don't. Max Lucado's You Are Special. These are for little children, all the way up to stories like Jane Eyre that they're already having to read in high school, which is an incredible story about what it means to be human and to understand your own worth. So utilizing everything that we have at our disposal and making connections as it kind of naturally unfolds around our kitchen table or in the car. Good opportunities and letting them participate. That's the key.
That's so good. So as I work with college students, we do have students come to us that have never been challenged, and they should have been. So when I said earlier about exposing our children to things at the same time they're being exposed to it or one step ahead, we have to actually realize that our goal for our kids really is to be in the world, to be making a difference in the world. That means we can't hide them away all the time. We actually have to train them for the battlefield of ideas that are out there. We don't want them just to survive. We want them to thrive. We want them to be agents of transformation for what is true, good, and beautiful. That means they must be equipped to be able to have conversations like this. So for our 18-year-old now, I actually find myself, you know, showing her something that I saw in one of the debates or an ad and saying, Neely, what do you think about this? And truly letting her sit in the struggle and wrestle through it when I'm beside her, but forcing her to do the hard work now because we've prepared her. She has to sit in it, wrestle with it, and we're available to answer questions and to help her think about it. But we want to lead her to see the conclusions, not just tell her what to think.
Both of our children are at a state now where they are convinced that the pro-life position is true. And they understand those reasons as to why they think that. So that gives them a little more security when it comes to addressing challenges. We're doing it in a place where the nerves, it's all off. The pressure's off. they get to just kind of mess up with their words and but this, but that, but okay, but then, and then, you know, you kind of see them thinking through it out loud. That's what we want right now. So that when they are challenged, they know what kind of question they would ask. They know that they wouldn't feel shaken at their core, and they're able to respond with grace and with truth. And we want both of those things to be evident.
So Megan and Tripp, you've both shared a couple of great examples for parents, but can we get a few just specific talking points for a couple of age demographics, just speaking in generalities here? If you were talking to, for example, a six-year-old, what might be some of the things that you would say? And then similarly, a 10-year-old and a 16-year-old, just kind of giving a bit of that, you know, range for them. What would be some things that you might say to those different age groups?
It would have to be in generalities, right? Because parents know their kids and know where they are. And not every six-year-old has been exposed to the same thing. I think with a six-year-old, I would still be building that foundation of, why are you valuable? You know, you are a young woman of God, or you are a young man of God, like all those types of things. And then we would have some conversations when it came to the value question. That's the one I want them to understand. You are a human being made in the image of God.
And that's where your stories really come into play, right?
Yes. Yeah. Stories that would have that theme or that idea, because stories are a powerful vehicle. You know, they sneak past defenses and teach us true things, not like a textbook does. So a six-year-old is ready to absorb that. A six-year-old is looking for heroes. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important to encourage and to talk about. If they ask the question of abortion, then I would answer it in a very general way. Abortion is that question where some mommies don't know what to do with the babies they have inside of them. And so sometimes they might seek to kill those babies. And we don't want that to happen. We want those moms to know they're valuable and to know that their babies are valuable. So it would be that softer language, and then leave it, because unless they ask more, you don't need to offer more. The 10-year-old is not that much farther along unless they've been exposed to more. So the same kind of trajectory there. We still build on the foundation. We might start looking at science. What is a human being? How does that start? And, you know, without getting into the birds and the bees talk necessarily, the embryological development is a miraculous and wonderful thing to study. This is how you began. You were one cell, and then you were two, and then it kept going. And it wasn't your mommy doing this. It was God and His Holy Spirit and you driving that development from within. And you're still doing that. Remember last year when you couldn't do this, but now you can't? Like all of that, I would get into that scientific part there, because still that's building the foundation, the underneath, paired with the human value. By the time they get to middle school.
Yeah, because that's where this transition happens, where they should be asking more questions. They are going to become more aware of things that are going on in the world. And this is where we are right there with them, building on that foundation of human value. As the issue of abortion comes up, now it is, well, some people are taking the life of the unborn for various reasons. And maybe we talk about those reasons, the way that they don't understand human value, the way that there's a departure from the truth that these kids already know. And as there are questions about what that means and how that's done, then we would simply respond, I think, directly with that. For our 12-year-old, as he's asking, I'm explaining exactly what is happening. And then as they develop then into 16-year-olds, as you mentioned, think about our own kid. Well, now this is where we begin to transition to let them struggle, to let them own it, mm-hmm. to start challenging them in their views, to challenge them with some of the war that is going on out there, to let them deal with it. Now we're beginning to train them more for the battle that's there.
Well, I wish we had had this conversation when our four sons were at a very early age, but I think this is excellent, powerful equipping that you are providing to parents on this issue, which leads me into the last question. And that's, do you have stories of how you've impacted youth and seen that light bulb go on and really impacted the way they look at the abortion issue?
Yeah, I'm recalling a few. I recall years ago at a high school, it was a Catholic high school, presenting the pro-life case. And in an environment like that, the hardest part to present is the science, because you know that there is someone in that room always who either had an abortion last week, drove their friend to the clinic, encouraged someone to have it, or pressured their girlfriend to have one. You know, it's every room I go into, that is going to be the case, even in the church. And so that part of the presentation is difficult. There was a young girl who came to me, and her story was she had had one last week.
Oh.
It started with a question. You said that value means that because they're human, but what if they're not even conscious yet? Like they can't feel any pain at this point. So that it can't be right. And I had to answer her honestly, knowing there was probably something underneath her question. And in that moment, the floodgates open, and I was probably the first adult that she told about what had happened that last week. And I had an opportunity to sit with this young woman and to encourage her as to her own value and to the truth of the gospel, because I do believe that though you can make the pro-life case, and there are many who don't hold to the Christian worldview who make the same scientific and philosophical case that I presented earlier, but I think that it is so beautifully grounded in the Christian worldview, in that Imago Dei language, that this young woman had no idea of her own worth or of the truth of the gospel as it applied to her, as it applies to me, as it applied to that unborn child, in that she was able to go and seek help. So that was a hard case. There was another case of a young woman that I met in Seattle, and this was about 3 years ago. Her name is Bridget. Name, right? That's as much as I can say.
Yeah.
Good. She was 13 when I met her. She heard the pro-life case from the main stage at a youth conference there. And I didn't actually meet her till the next year. And she came to me because I was at the same event doing a breakout session on the issue of abortion. And after the session, she walked up and she said, "You don't know me, but my name is Bridget. And I heard you speak last year on the issue, and I had never heard anything like that before when it came to the issue of abortion." She said, "And after that conference, not only did it help me with the issues I was struggling with to learn what it means to be valuable as a human being, but I knew I had to do something." So she got her best friend from high school and dragged her, had her parents drive them to the Planned Parenthood Clinic in Seattle, where they started sidewalk counseling every week using what they had learned at that conference. She was 14 when she started that. That day that she stood, that she met me, she said, "Miss Megan, it is so good to meet you. I want you to know we were there last week and we changed someone's mind. We saved a life," she said. And she was overjoyed. And if that were the end of the story, that would certainly be enough, but it's not. This young woman asked her mother, she was a homeschool student, and she said, "Mom, what do I need to do to finish high school?" Her mom laid out all the credits that she needed, and that child finished high school within a handful of months.
Wow.
And then she went to work full-time with a pro-life organization where she is still working hard, standing on the sidewalk, talking to women as they come in, showing them that she cares, telling them a better story about themselves and their children through the science and philosophy she's trained to offer, but also through the grace that she knows is available to us all. And she is saving lives in real time. And just things like that, where it goes from someone going, "I didn't know that Christianity, that the church had anything relevant to say about this issue," to saying, "Why hasn't somebody told me this before?" And then to saying, "Well, I need to do something about it." Mm-hmm. And these are as young as middle and high school kids.
Yeah, I'm sure glad Bridget is on our side because she's a wonderful ambassador. Well, thank you. I think we have had an absolutely wonderful conversation here. Thank you both for sharing what you know and what's on your hearts.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having us. It's a joy and honor.
And thank you for the work that you all are doing. Mm-hmm.
You know, Victor, I said this to our guests, but I really mean it, that I wish we'd had this conversation early on while our four sons were just young boys, because there is so much to glean for parents on bringing up the abortion issue in the household.
Well, and it's so important, Brad. I mean, as we know, there are a lot of young people who sometimes we just assume that they're going to maintain the beliefs that they have through their entire life, but maybe they go to college. And we know that they're going to be challenged and challenged very hard, whether it's from their peers or even professors, people in a position of authority over them that'll try and change their pro-life view. So laying that foundation, as we talked about today, is so critically important.
You are so right. And that's something that Megan and Tripp did very well. Because as you say, when they go to high school or especially at the university campus, those environments are horrid as far as discussions and the sanctity of life. And they were very intentional on giving them a foundation and then testing that, letting the children come to their own conclusions and not just parroting the parents' opinions.
You know, and I'm not a parent myself, but from the outside speaking in, a lot of that was information that I can absorb looking forward as just good parenting advice with all sorts of difficult issues. Obviously, this relates to the life issues, but just with anything out there to carry on and to teach a kid the way that they should go. It's even a biblical command to raise your child the way that they should go. Man, it's so valuable.
You are so right.
And I want to encourage you, our listener, to go to our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find more on this topic, and you'll also find books and resources, more information information so that you can dive deeper onto this topic and then share it with your friends, your family members, your community. That way we can raise the next generation and make sure that they are defenders of life so that that torch is passed on and that it is carried very effectively. Again, you can find that at our website, lifeissues.org. And be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.